You are listening to Radio Boston. Did you know your yard might have moved from a 5A to a 6? That is according to the latest update from the USDA's Plant Hardiness Zone map. It means that some plants that previously maybe didn't survive in the region could now. So could other living organisms that might follow those plants. And we wanted to know why and what that means for us here. So we recently sat down with Barbara Moran, a correspondent on WBUR's climate and environmental team, Trevor Smith, design and education manager for Weston Nurseries, and Sue Scheufele, production agricultural leader at UMass Amherst's Extension Program, to ask. Trevor started with what exactly the Plant Hardiness Zone map measures.
We are talking about the general temperature range, and that's what the hardiness zone map is. It kind of measures the 12 or 30 year temperature range of our area, how hot it gets and how cold it gets during the winter. And so what this map and change has said is that we are getting warmer here in Massachusetts or here in New England. We're actually in New England. We're actually 2 degrees warmer than the rest of the planet. We're warming faster in New England than the rest of the planet. But on that small scale, your yard and your area has gotten significantly warmer over the past number of years.
Now, Barb, the USDA periodically produces this map.
Yep.
And they're going to now produce, so A, they do that.
Yes. It's sort of more sporadic, it's more sporadically than periodically.
Okay.
Yeah. They produced it 6 times before, but now going forward, they're going to produce it every 10 years.
How come?
Because they want to sort of align it with the changing climate norms, right? So there's more of a sense that going forward that they want this information to be coming out more regularly.
And Sue, how do people use this map?
Folks use it to figure out what plants are going to survive in their garden. Certain plants can tolerate different levels of cold temperature.
So, Trevor, I'm going to get really basic on this now for a minute. I go to Weston Nurseries where you work. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at a potted plant, whether it's an annual, which is that one that grows for 1 year and then dies away, or a perennial, which is that one that you plant and that looks like it dies in the winter, but then it comes back. And there's information about it, about what zones it grows in, right? That's what we're talking about.
Correct.
Here. So fill that out more for people, especially people who have no idea what we're talking about because they don't plant anything.
Correct. So as far as annuals are concerned, you don't have too much to worry about because that's growing in 1 year. More often than not, what you're putting in your window box is a tropical plant anyway. For instance, Lantana will grow in Florida just along the side of the road. Here, it is definitely an annual. So you don't have to worry about it much there. When you're looking at your perennial plants, you'll want to know. So up until recently, I've always stayed in like the 5 and below range, which means
zones.
That
a plant
yes,
that's
zone
qualified
five,
for that
correct.
Zone.
5 and below. So I know that when we have a typical or what was a typical New England cold winter, that plant would then come back again in the spring. And if you started to go outside of that in the past, and if you still do, but I mean, if you went outside of that in the past and we had a particularly cold winter, that plant may not make it back the next season. So when you're looking at that, it is the first guideline when you're looking for right plant, right place. The first guideline that you go by is it going to be hardy in my area?
Now, Sue Scheufele, you specialize in vegetables. Same thing is true for veggies?
Yeah. So with the vegetable crops, the same climate data, weather data is used to calculate like the first and last frost dates. And so commercial farmers that I work with in my role at UMass Extension might be able to plant a little earlier. But one of the things about climate change in our region is while the average temperature is increasing, there's still a lot of variability. So you might be able to plant earlier, but there's still kind of a high chance of a late hard frost. And that's kind of what we saw last year. So when you do decide to plant earlier, you need to be prepared to do some kind of frost protection potentially in the case of a late frost.
Remind us of what the significance of a frost is on something that you've planted. How does it work on the plant and why is it a bad thing, especially for agriculture?
They are sensitive to different ranges in cold. So if we get a hard frost, sometimes just the leaves will get a little bit of a like tip burn, We see that commonly, but if it's really cold, like last year, May 18th, we had, I think, like 28 degrees. So folks had already put out like tomatoes and stuff. Those are very sensitive. So a lot of the leaves dying back, but you can have damage to the growing point of the plant. And if that happens, the plant could die. And yeah, it won't come back from that kind of damage. And we did see some of that, even in cold, hardy vegetables like cabbage.
You're nodding a lot, Barb.
It's just interesting that the climate is, it's getting weird, right? And I mean, this is part of the issue is like that with the, if you look at the overall changes in this map in Massachusetts, they're not hugely dramatic. You know, there's, it's, you know, they've, it's warmed, right? But I think it's a lot of this, you know, I was talking to one farmer and she was telling me, you know, the Farmer's Almanac doesn't work anymore. And it's just sort of this big picture of like looking ahead of how do you think about what to plant and not just for, you know, your garden, you know, and your window box, but like agriculture, right? When you're sort of looking at these not only changes in temperature, but changes in swings in temperature and changes in rainfall. And that's sort of beyond this particular map, but it's sort of how it fits into the big picture.
Trevor Smith, you're nodding a lot about this volatility and planning question.
Yeah, absolutely. Growing up, it was always April showers bring May flowers. But, you know, the past Aprils have been, I mean, maybe not this one, but the past Aprils have been pretty dry. And actually, May's been the wet month. So it really is that that volatility. And as Sue was saying, you know, last year we lost all of our stone fruits and many of our
in Massachusetts
yeah. And many of our fruiting crops in Massachusetts because we had that late frost. And those plants all blossom, you know, early. They're blooming now. And if we had a hard frost now, we then lose all those crops. So it's really the volatility, the unpredictability of the climate and not really knowing in the nursery industry, when do you bring plants in? In the landscape industry, how soon can I start putting plants in the ground? And when will these things be safe to be out there? Because we're trying to put them in and we want them to get established and we want them to be in a good environment. You're trying to plan your crops. You're trying to plan your jobs. And all of a sudden you get these deluges or you get this freeze and it just screws everything up for you.
So here's where we are. What started this conversation was this update from the USDA on the plant hardiness zone map. They used to do it periodically. Now they're going to do it every 10 years. With us, Barbara Moran, who's a correspondent on WBUR's climate and environment team. You just heard Trevor Smith, design and education manager for Weston Nurseries, and Sue Scheufele, who's a production agricultural leader at the UMass Amherst Extension Program. We've just been now talking about sort of the volatility that has come with these warming temperatures. There are a couple of different places I want to go, but before I do, I do want to note that as the USDA came out with this new plant hardiness zone map, they were careful to say they can't necessarily say that the changes in zones, right, Barb, that
correct.
This particular map shows is a result of a warming climate because it's just an averaging of 30 years of temperatures.
Yeah, and it's also this map looks mostly at particularly at low temperatures, mostly average low temperatures, because that sort of determines whether a plant can survive the winter. And when looking at climate change, you look at a lot of other variables over a longer time. And so, but this map and the warming that this map shows certainly fits in with the bigger
picture.
Within
the larger context.
Yeah, that's definitely
right. And so then we're talking about the challenges of how do you begin to plan, right, when you've got this volatility and temperatures are warming. So that's kind of where we are. There are a few other questions that begins to raise, some on the downer side, some on the happy side, right? And I really want to very much bounce back and forth between these things because that's the reality of sort of the moment that we're
mm-hmm,
in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bounce back to the happy for a minute in that there are potentially now plants, trees, flowers, vegetables that we could bring to this region that we didn't before. So let's have some fun for a minute, Trevor. A flower that you used to not be able to sell that now with a 7 in New England, somebody might be able to grow here.
It really is that opportunity. Where I see the opportunity is more ecologically. And so from there, where we bring up and we're able to establish native plants from down south. So let's just assume that the climate is going to keep warming. Bringing some of those native plants, maybe native to New York, maybe native to, say, Philadelphia, if we start bringing stuff up from the mid-Atlantic and we start establishing those colonies here, as the climate begins to warm, as nature begins to move north, we can obviously move plants faster than they can move themselves. So as that all happens, we're able to establish those colonies for all that wildlife, et cetera, that begins to move north with those plants.
Because so we know the wildlife is beginning to move north.
It certainly is going to, and that and wildlife will definitely move faster than the plants themselves too. I mean, this is something that usually took hundreds or thousands of years. Now it's happening in decades. So it is actually, I feel it's our job, you know, as humans to, since we kind of caused this problem, to help move it along and fix this problem.
Sue, and I want to come back to you in just a minute, Barb, but before I do, Sue, what about the same thing on veggies?
Yeah, so I think one thing we might see is just a longer season for some of the crops we already know. Some things we grow in Massachusetts are kind of at the edge of their range, so like the solanaceous crops, tomatoes, hot peppers, eggplants, we have to do a little bit of work to get those to harvest in Massachusetts. So farmers would have, or gardeners would have, a little bit easier time and a little bit longer season. And same with like melons and watermelons.
So Sue and Trevor, I'm going to come back to you in a minute and look at some of the darker side of what we've just been talking about. But before I do, Barb, one of the things that strikes me in what we're hearing from Sue and Trevor is this intentionality of, okay, ecosystems changing, bringing plants up, but because we know animals are migrating in different patterns, et cetera. This sounds like there has to be regional planning, like agricultural industries have to have conversations on this. Across our reporting at WBUR and the communities that you've talked to about everything from recycling urine earlier this year to everything else, are we seeing any kind of collective awareness?
Collective awareness, yes, absolutely, especially by people who work, you know, for the fishing industry, right? As you see the shift in commercial fishing, and for farmers, as you see this shift, there's definitely a lot of talk and a lot of awareness, but I don't see a lot of understanding of the best direction. I mean, I'm thinking mostly of this one farmer I talked to last year after those rains over the summer, like just wiped out his farm. And he was saying it's unclear exactly what to do. Like, he's like, should I move to another field? Should I stop farming? Should I plant a different plant? And it's like, I think this is part of what's so disconcerting about, the overall climate change is that you're not quite sure where to go. I mean, things are sort of destabilized in this way. And so I think there's definitely, among all the farmers and other folks I talk to, a lot of concern about what to do, but not a lot of surety about what to do.
I do think that our Department of Ag, the Mass Department of Ag, has done a really good job of supporting farmers. Like last year, they put together pretty quickly an emergency fund for farmers who did lose crops as a result of either the frost or the rains that you described. They also have lots of grants available to farmers through like the Food Security Infrastructure Grant Program. So lots of farms are taking advantage of these state programs to adopt mitigation strategies, whether it's building a high tunnel, which is like a greenhouse where they can grow crops directly in the soil, just to provide some protection from the elements, or using shade cloth to protect from excessive heat. So there are programs out there to help mitigate these effects of climate change. And we're especially lucky here in Massachusetts, I think.
That's really encouraging, for our agricultural industry here in Massachusetts. So then with animals coming up, with new plant life coming up from the south, migrating with the warmer weather, come diseases and pests.
So, yeah. So the as you mentioned before, and it's something that I say oftentimes, is before New England had like the perfect reset button. You know, we would have, you know, mosquitoes or ticks or, you know, some sort of an outbreak, you know, or a caterpillar outbreak, whatever it might be. And then we'd have a normal New England winter and that reset would happen. Now it's more the repercussions of not having that. So the repercussions of not having that winter are that our native plants, many of them need to have a stratification or a cold period for those seeds to germinate. If we, you know, the past two winters, we haven't got that cold. So if we don't get that cold or we don't get cold long enough, then we won't have the germination that we need. So we'll have fewer of those natives.
So, for example, give me a native plant you're thinking of.
So anything from columbine, aquilegia, I mean, even milkweed, but I mean, many of our native plants that people either know or don't know, but like all of that, they need that period. So if we don't have that, we're just going to have fewer of those plants. Mm. And then as that pest pressure moves up, and if it doesn't die back, then it's going to continue to increase. Where I get concerned is, for instance, let's just go with mosquitoes and ticks. If those populations don't get knocked back, then the mosquito and tick industry is going to explode, and there's going to be many more sprayers out there. But the repercussions of all that spraying really does hurt our amphibian population, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm more worried about our knee-jerk reaction to some of these pressures that come up and some of these unexpected changes. And it could be, you know, an opportunity for some people, but I think our knee-jerk reaction as people, as humans, to these pressures can be not beneficial at, you know, at all.
So the last two questions are going to be, so everybody knows what's coming. Sue and Trevor, I'm going to ask you what we can do, and then Barb, I'm going to ask you what to watch, right? Mm. So Sue, what should people in Massachusetts, from your perspective, what's something we can do?
It's hard to choose just one, but I'd say, just like you said, supporting our local farms, they're really on the front lines here with climate change and putting so much on the line. So just purchasing fruits and vegetables locally when you can, going to the farmer's market, purchasing starts for your garden from local farms. They often have plant sales this time of year. If you're looking for veggie starts, that's a great way to support vegetable farms this time of year. And make sure we're not bringing pests from other parts of the country, which can sometimes happen when we ship plants around.
All right. So, Trevor, let's assume you're plus one-ing Sue, because I saw you do that as you were responding to what she said. Another thing, something else we can do.
So, well, there's a lot of positives here. So it's not just in, say, native plants. And while we can be excited about the shifting, you know, zones and the opportunity to use new plants, I would suggest people use them judiciously, cautiously, not only because they could get wiped out if we had, you know, some climate swings, but I also don't want people to go so far in the other direction because many of our local insects and animals need what is growing here currently, not what is growing further away. The positives here, so it's not necessarily all bad. The greatest part here is that we can all do something by planting, by increasing green space in our municipalities, by really focusing on our properties and decompacting our soil, restoring hydrology, introducing some native plants, if not all native plants, and just eliminating some of the sides and the fertilizers, getting a little bit more in line and balancing our properties because our properties
sides
aren't going.
Sides being C-I-D-E. Got
yes,
it.
Pesticides, yep. Herbicides, fungicides, any of that. Just finding that balance on our property so that we can have people and planet and making our, you know, our pieces of the planet a little bit more in line with the rest, you know, with the rest of the planet. And there's a lot of wonderful things that can happen here. And when you do that, then you're increasing carbon sequestration, then you're decreasing flooding. You know, we have a lot of power to do this. What we need to do is stop thinking about the emaciated polar bear every time we think about climate change. What we have to do is stop waiting for all the governments of the world to decide to get on the same page. And we just need to start doing it on our own properties, whether it's a balcony, an eighth of an acre, or 30 acres. And I think we need to stop thinking in silos and just think about that interconnectedness of all of our actions and how what we do just affects the world around us.
Mm. Point beautifully taken.
Right.
And I will also, on your behalf, make sure everybody understands that you are not anti-polar bear.
I am not anti-polar bear. I am certainly not. I am anti-emaciated polar bear.
Exactly.
For sure.
Barb, what are you going to watch for?
So coming up, two things. One is the sort of ancillary to the pests. Is one thing that these less cold winters are allowing is sort of southern pests to creep up. You know, so I'm going to be watching for appearances of things like the southern pine beetle, which has been creeping northward and sort of hoping that doesn't come here. And I'm also going to be over the summer, like looking at farmers. Last summer was pretty bad for local farmers. You know, it's just had one sort of disaster after another. So I'm hoping that this summer is better for them. And I'd like to see how some of them are thinking about adapting and going forward this year. And hopefully how some of that works out.
Barbara Moran of WBUR, Trevor Smith of Weston Nurseries, and Sue Scheufele of the UMass Amherst Extension Program joined us in Studio 2 weeks ago. And you can catch Plant Night at WBUR's City Space on May 22nd to pick up some expert planting tips. For more information on that, go to wbur.org/events.